97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Well, if you've been watching media coverage from anybody in the mainstream, the last, 24 hours, 48 hours, whatever it is, since the debate, you'd know one thing. Trump is a liar. That's what the narrative has been. In fact, CNN has put out fact checks. Jill Biden's been yelling it. Many, many people in the establishment are yelling it. They can't quite figure out what to say, though, because anybody with a little bit of mustard seed of journalistic integrity is saying, look, that was a bad performance. They'll try to spin it, but they're at least saying it. But then there are some people who are going, no. He just had a cold. Because if you didn't know this, about halfway through the debate, the White House or the press or secretary or whatever, they released a statement saying, well, we probably should have told you this ahead of time, but Joe Biden's had a cold. That's what we're seeing. We didn't release this ahead of time because we wanted to wait and see. But now we know we should have told you ahead of time, basically acknowledging that it was terrible. Here's what's amazing. The people who are yelling Trump is a liar, which has been a headline since Thursday night. Trump is a liar and you shouldn't believe anything. And Joe Biden just got performance issues. He's not a liar. He's a good man. He's got good policies, as you can see from the last 4 years. But Trump is a liar and you can't believe anything he says, and he'll destroy democracy. How? I don't know. I'm not going to explain that. I'm just going to say it. But all the people saying that he's a liar, amazingly, have also been telling you for quite a while now, 4 years at least, that Joe Biden is doing fine and that his mental acuity is fine.
Making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with dealing with everything we have to do with. Look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump.
Well, he's right. He did beat Medicare. He beat it to death, and he's destroying Medicare.
I would love to get to the argument itself, but I have to finish this point first about the people who've been telling you that Trump is a liar are also telling you, some still are, but everybody up until last night were saying, no, Joe Biden's mental acuity is fine. Those are the people who you're supposed to trust to tell you what's true and what's not. CNN did a fact check of the debate Thursday night, and here are some of the things that they pointed out. And the headline of this article, amazingly, here, I'll go back up to the top of it, says fact-checking the CNN presidential debate, but that wasn't, like, the clickbait was Trump lies, Biden struggles, or something like that. Here are some of the things they fact-checked that Donald Trump said. That Iran didn't fund terror groups during his presidency, that every legal scholar wanted Roe v. Wade, wanted abortion to go back to the states, that Americans don't pay the cost of tariffs on China and other countries. Europe accepts no American cars. Those kind of things. Now, there's other ones, too, but that's a big portion of the things they fact-checked him on. And it would be like me saying, you know what? I've been on TV. Everybody knows I'm good looking. Well, okay. like it's just bravado. Or let's be more specific. Everybody knows that Corinne Jean-Pierre is a bad press secretary. Well, you could fact check that and factually, everybody in the country does not know that. Some people don't even know that she is a press secretary or who she is. So factually, that's false. But a lot of these things are the way Trump speaks. Like, every legal scholar and everybody in general wanted Roe versus Wade overturned. Well, a lot of legal scholars did acknowledge, even on the left, that Roe versus Wade was not a law. I mean, it was a Supreme Court decision. It never was a law. If it was a law, the Supreme Court couldn't overturn it except on constitutional grounds, which they didn't. They just said the Supreme Court actually shouldn't have ruled on this. So when you say everybody knows that, well, everybody knows that 4 more years of Joe Biden would be a disaster. You know, that's the kind of statement. Well, most people do kind of know, man, that would be bad. Everybody knows Joe couldn't make it another 4 years, a better example. Well, most people do know that, but not everybody. So when you fact check Trump, a lot of what you're fact checking and saying, well, he's a liar, is that kind of stuff. Now, he did say some other things that I've never heard before. He said that Biden would refer to black people as super predators. Now, I've never heard that. I'm not saying that that has never happened, but I've never heard it. And they fact check it and said they can't find that he's ever done that. Okay, well, then that was a lie, or at least something he thought was true that wasn't. They fact checked the fraud. He said fraud marred the results of the 2020 election. And they just go, well, no, it didn't. And you're like, okay, that's your fact checks. That's kind of stuff like that. The U.S. has provided more aid to Ukraine than Europe has. You know, there's debate about that. I'm pretty sure that we have, but they're citing some source that says, no. Europe as a whole has provided this amount of aid. And we have, you know, I mean, that's the kind of stuff. You're like, really? That's what you're concerned about electing him on? He's such a liar. He says things like, we've given too much aid to Ukraine and Europe hasn't kept their part. You know, that's the kind of stuff you're like, that's your thing. They also, though, did fact check Biden, and he had just about as many things that he said that were false or misleading in the CNN article. So it's a misleading headline to go, well, Biden struggled in performance, but Trump lied. And they fact checked them just about the same, which is amazing because it's CNN. One more time, I'm going to play this clip.
Making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the dealing with everything we have to do with. Look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump.
Well, he's right. He did beat Medicare. He beat it to death, and he's destroying Medicare.
It's incredible because when you hear Trump talk and you see him on Oprah in the 1980s and you see him on Letterman in the 90s and stuff, a lot of the stuff he's been saying about U.S. policy, he's been saying for years. So he hasn't really changed. He changed party affiliation because back then he would have been a Democrat, probably just because he was in New York and he wanted to be a socialite. But he's a Republican now, and of course they hate him for that. But once in a while, so what I'm saying is Trump kind of says his own things. He doesn't always use the normal, like, talking points that you could use. Now, he stuck to a lot of them. He talked about the border quite a bit on the debate night, and that's what you do. But there are things that he'll pull out every now and then. Like in 2016, he was talking about how the tax code is stupid and people can cheat it. And it's because of these people, he's pointing at Hillary Clinton, that they've done that. He's like, of course I would get around paying taxes. Why wouldn't I do that? You know, that's the stuff that politicians typically don't say. But he would also say things that were kind of out of left field, like NATO needs to pay their fair share. You know, we need to have, we need to redo NAFTA. You know, people just weren't talking about that stuff, but he did. There was one issue that he did at that debate that I've never heard anybody really making the case for. Joe Biden said this, and I don't know which. I think Trump actually said his first, and then Joe Biden responded. But I'll play what Joe Biden said first, regardless, because this is a Democrat talking point. And then I'll show you what Trump said about it in a new way.
The biggest thing he'll do if we defeat this man, because he wants to get rid of Social Security. He thinks there's plenty to cut in Social Security. He's wanted to cut Social Security and Medicare both times. And that's what, and if you look at the program put forward by the House Republican Caucus that he, I believe, supports, is in fact want to cut it as well. The idea that we don't need to protect our seniors is ridiculous. And by the way, the American public has greater health care coverage today than ever before.
So CNN actually did fact check him on that and say there's no evidence that Trump has said anything about cutting Social Security. In fact, like I said, this is his very unique message on Social Security and Medicare.
So I've dealt with politicians all my life. I've been on this side of the equation for the last 8 years. I've never seen anybody lie like this guy. He lies. I've never seen it. He could look you in the face. So about so many other things, too. And we mentioned the laptop. We mentioned Russia, 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 Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. Everything he does is a lie. It's misinformation and disinformation. The losers and suckers story that he made up is a total lie on the military. It's a disgrace. But Social Security, he's destroying it because millions of people are pouring into our country and they're putting them onto Social Security. They're putting them onto Medicare, Medicaid. They're putting them in our hospitals. They're taking the place of our citizens there. What they're doing to the VA, to our veterans, is unbelievable. Our veterans are living in the street, and these people are living in luxury hotels. He doesn't know what he's doing, and it's really coming back. I've never seen such anger in our country before.
So he said that a couple times last night, and when he did, I went, well, yeah. And I think a lot of Americans went, yeah, that's actually true. That's going to happen. It hasn't happened yet because it hasn't caught up yet. But if Joe Biden's elected for another 4 years, or a Democrat really at all, they're not going to deal with illegal immigration. They're going to try to provide amnesty to these people. They are going to eat up, they already are, but they're going to eat up all of the resources on things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, that right now they've begun to do, but 4 years of doing that, those programs are going to be completely bankrupt. And so his message was, you want to save Social Security? You want to save some of these social programs? Which I'm always loath to really dive into. Like, let's expand social programs. Well, they're expanding them right now through illegal immigration. He's saying, look, if you want to keep them, you got to stop the illegal immigration. We're going to take a short break from debate coverage and maybe even this little Supreme Court we'll talk about in this hour to talk with Paul Hutchinson. Now, if you don't know his name, that's okay. If you've seen Sound of Freedom, you will recognize him because he is one of the people in the movie, or at least he's one of the people played in the movie. He was central in making the movie happen, and he is an advocate for, against child sex trafficking and sex trafficking in general. He is a watchdog on these things, and he's got some news for us regarding some parts of the country that maybe we haven't been watching for. So stick around. Little departure. We'll be right back. A little bit more on the debate to come here, but I wanted to plug real quick on Thursday night, if you haven't heard the promos yet, we have our fourth annual Music for Fireworks. Always a little bit different twist, so, you know, some of the same songs are going to be played at the right times. But starting at 8 o'clock on Thursday night, July 4th, we will have uninterrupted music, patriotic stuff, you know. I mean, some just like classic rock kind of American-themed stuff. But also some speeches, you know, a little like one-minute versions of like famous American speeches, slogans, Americana stuff. All commercial free for 3 hours, 8 to 11 on Thursday night. Always look forward to doing Music for Fireworks and adding new pieces to it every year to just make the experience better and better and better. So this is the fourth annual on the 4th. I guess it's kind of our magic birthday. So we invite you to tune in for that and make it a part of your fireworks tradition, whatever that looks like on Thursday night. We are going to get back to more of this debate coverage in just a minute here. The Supreme Court thing. The January 6th Supreme Court, you know, they said you can't just make laws into whatever you want them to be. I was watching CBS news coverage of that when it dropped on Friday and was amazed that they were taking special coverage because it was like not normal time. You know, this was like 11 o'clock in the morning and they took special coverage of it. And they were grasping at straws trying to figure out how to spin this into something. I think they honestly went into special coverage so that they could show a bunch of images from January 6th because Biden had such a terrible debate performance that they were trying to spin something. But even that wasn't good news for them. The Supreme Court said you can't make things into laws that aren't laws. And so a lot of those defendants are going to have their charges dropped. We'll be right back with more on the debates. This is Wiggins America on 97.1 FM Talk. I've been looking forward to talking to Paul Hutchinson for quite some time. Having been a fan of the movie Sound of Freedom, we've talked to producers of that movie. It's great to talk to Paul Hutchinson, who is kind of the whole point of the movie, the inspiration behind the movie. Paul, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks, Ryan. It's great to be here with your audience as well.
So for people who have not seen Sound of Freedom, which was just a global phenomenon and so glad that that movie was made and exists now, give people a little bit of a background as to how that movie got made, why you were the subject of a feature film.
Well, I was one of many subjects of that feature film. In fact, the truth is we took about 8 different undercover rescue missions of trafficked children throughout the world, and we put those stories together with about 20 different operators together into a handful of actors in a film that did very, very well in creating awareness for the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world, which is human trafficking. And I was the primary investor in Sound of Freedom. I was also an executive producer, and the producer actually played me in the film. So in the very first rescue mission, I was in real life, I was the fund manager who quit his job to finance that and go undercover and start rescuing children. Since that time, I have led or played a key part in over 70 undercover rescue missions in 15 countries, including the jungle rescue that we did in Haiti in real life. That was after a little boy, not after the little girl that was in the movie, but we kind of put them all together into the same storyline. So that was just one of the many rescue missions that we wanted to bring to light to help good people everywhere be aware of what's going on so that they could keep their children safe and so that we could work together in eradicating child trafficking.
Paul, we've talked to some of the fundraisers for Sound of Freedom to get it into theaters because we've heard the story of how that movie even came about and how it was almost shelved. And, you know, it's really a story on its own of how the Sound of Freedom came about. But you left your professional career in 2017. That's a pretty big jump to commit to this cause.
Well, and it's even a bigger jump when you realize what that career was. I was the co-founder of what was at the time a multi-billion dollar investment firm. In fact, when I retired completely in 2017, we had well over $10 billion in assets under management. So I was doing very well in the professional career. In fact, my business partner, John Pennington, when I first went undercover on that first mission, he called me up and he said, "Paul," he said, have you thought through this?" He said, you're set. You literally could sell out and buy an island and be happy the rest of your life." And I said, "John, would I really be happy if I bought an island, if I bought another plane or a yacht?" I said, "If I was doing something else dangerous, if I was climbing Everest, you and I would have the same conversation." He said, "Yeah, we probably would." And I said, "When I'm 95 years old and I look back on my life and I say I climbed this mountain and I helped build this multi-billion dollar company and I helped rescue this many children from slavery, which one of them matters at all?" And he's since that time become one of our biggest supporters in the Child Liberation Foundation and other foundations that I have helped to start and fund over the years.
So the Child Liberation Foundation, Paul, you know, why was that such a calling for you? I mean, what is it that you said, "I have to do this"?
Well, if you saw the movie, there's a little girl. They called her Princess, referred to her as Rocio in the movie. That was just a name we took from one of my ex-wife's names. But it was that little girl that changed my life forever. I was sitting in a chair this little girl presented as 11-year-old virgin standing before me. Her eyes were almost even with mine as I was sitting down and she was standing up. And all I could see was fear in her eyes. And her makeup had been smeared from her crying, scared to death of meeting me and the other men who were supposedly going to defile her. And I made a commitment at that moment to myself, to my Creator, to God, to that little child, that I would dedicate my life to eradicating that evil from the face of the earth. And since that time, that's exactly what I've done. I turned to the Homeland Security agent that was with us at the time and some of the other operators, and I said, that was the most transformational experience ever, and that I had experienced up to that time. And, you know, I had donated a lot to child-related charities, but I had no idea the evil that was in the world. And when I saw it firsthand and saw how horrible a situation that was, and realized that it was the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world and the second most profitable, second only to illegal arms, illegal drug trade, and soon going to become the most profitable, because you can sell a bag of cocaine once, you can sell a child 5 or 10 times a day for years and years. And so I ended up retiring early, quit my job, and dedicated millions of dollars and all of my time to fighting child trafficking. And with the movie, we realized that, you know, back at the time of Abraham Lincoln, it wasn't guys like us. It wasn't the teams that did the undercover work and rescuing the slaves. It wasn't them that created the biggest difference. It was people like you, Ryan. It was the influencers. It was Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was the media of the age that created an awareness with good people of what was going on in the South. And in fact, years later, when Abraham Lincoln met Harriet, he shook her hand and he said, "So you're the little lady that wrote the book that started the Civil War." And so that's why we had to make the movie. We had to create awareness so that we could start having these conversations, and parents could learn things to keep their children safe in a dangerous world.
Paul, and that is why you're doing media now, as I understand it, is to talk about this issue. Let's talk about this before we run out of time. What is happening right now in Ukraine, and how is it related to this war that's ongoing?
I'll tell you this, Ryan. Every time there is a war, there is a massive earthquake, there is a calamity of any sort, traffickers around the world will come and take advantage of that situation. We spent a bunch of time in Haiti. Hundreds of children have been recovered in Haiti and brought back to their families because of our efforts and other foundations that I have helped to fund and start and our teams have worked on. And a huge percentage of them came from when the earthquake happened and traffickers brought these children into these horrible situations. This happens in every country that there's a travesty like that, and absolutely it's happening in Ukraine with the war. In fact, even before the war started, it was known that one of the worst places in all of Europe for child trafficking was in Ukraine, and there is a lot of things like this you're trying to cover up the child trafficking that's happening. And so as soon as there's a war somewhere, we have teams that go in. We've got teams that have been in Israel, in the Hamas areas, and identifying children that are there. And absolutely there's things that are going on in Ukraine as well. We've had teams over there many, many, many times. But it's been a source of human trafficking since the early 90s. There's a lot of people that are being trafficked for the purposes of forced labor, and a lot of sexual exploitation that's happening there as well.
Man, Paul, that's incredible. And I'm so glad that you have taken on this cause. Obviously, a lot of kids are too, and a lot of families. What can people who are hearing this do? It's one of those things that makes you want to take action. Paul, what do people do?
There's a couple things. First of all, I have where there's a book you can type. You can just go to soundoffreedombook.com, and it'll hyperlink you into a place you can get a book where the first four or five chapters are all about things that parents can do to keep their kids safe. It's, you know, the making of an undercover operator. I talk about all of the training that we did and the mindset and really paying attention to signs with that kids are showing that they could be vulnerable. Now, a lot of parents, when they leave the Sound of Freedom movie, they say, you know, I want to go do something. I want to help. I'm going to go fight this evil. And the worst thing that you can do is go to Ukraine or go to Colombia, try to go rescue some children. You're going to get arrested. You're probably going to get shot. And these are very dangerous places that traffickers are selling these children. The very best thing you can do as a parent is to go home and hug your children. And people are like, well, how does that help? You know, I'm not hugging children. Well, the majority of children that are taken, that are sold across borders, the majority of those children come from broken homes, from runaways or a broken, very broken foster care program where there's a high case of abuse and a high case of trafficking that's going on there. And so having a healthy nucleus family is very, very important. Teaching your children confidence, teaching them self-defense skills and situational awareness. These things are very, very valuable. And we teach that in the book as well. But the most important thing is having a relationship with your children where they can very comfortably come to you and tell you when something doesn't feel right. Here's that crazy statistic. The majority of children who are sold for sex, it's not like what you see in the movies. Yes, Sound of Freedom, those things really happen. Where a healthy family, a child is taken and taken to another country. Yes, those things do happen, but it's very, very seldom. The majority of children who are sold for these heinous acts sleep in their own beds at night, meaning a lot of times their parents are unaware. You need to have a relationship with your kids where they can comfortably come to you and say, hey, you know what? I don't like it when you tell me to hug Uncle Harry because he touches me weird. He tells me that we should have secrets together that aren't for you to hear. Or I don't like it when I go to our friend's house because her brother has been taking pictures of us when we're changing and he slaps me on my bum. Mm-hmm. Or I don't like this babysitter because this babysitter, she's showing us pornography and she tells us that we should trust her more than you. You know, these are grooming behaviors. And if your children feel uncomfortable in coming to you with these situations, then they're going to get worse. They're going to be taken advantage of by perpetrators and exploited. And it happens right under our noses. In fact, you walk out in your front yard, you look left and you look right. In every neighborhood in America, there's a very good chance that one of those homes is a dangerous place for children. And it's important for us to understand the fact that one out of every four women that you know, one out of every four, have been a victim of sexual abuse as a child. Most of them in their own homes, most of them without their mother or father even knowing about it. And so this is the big trap.
This is Wiggins America on 97.1 FM Talk. I've been looking forward to talking to Paul Hutchinson for quite some time, having been a fan of the movie Sound of Freedom. We've talked to producers of that movie. It's great to talk to Paul Hutchinson, who is kind of the whole point of the movie, the inspiration behind the movie. Paul, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks, Ryan. It's great to be here with your audience as well.
So for people who have not seen Sound of Freedom, which was just a global phenomenon and so glad that movie was made and exists now, give people a little bit of a background as to how that movie got made, why you were the subject of a feature film.
Well, I was one of many subjects of that feature film. In fact, the truth is we took about 8 different undercover rescue missions of trafficked children throughout the world, and we put those stories together with about 20 different operators together into a handful of actors in a film that did very, very well in creating awareness for the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world, which is human trafficking. And I was the primary investor in Sound of Freedom. I was also executive producer, and the producer actually played me in the film. So in the very first rescue mission, I was in real life, I was the fund manager who quit his job to finance that and go undercover and start rescuing children. Since that time, I have led or played a key part in over 70 undercover rescue missions in 15 countries, including the jungle rescue that we did in Haiti. In real life, that was after a little boy, not after the little girl that was in the movie, but we kind of put them all together into the same storyline. So that was just one of the many rescue missions that we wanted to bring to light to help good people everywhere be aware of what's going on so that they could keep their children safe and so that we could work together in eradicating child trafficking.
Paul, we've talked to some of the fundraisers for Sound of Freedom to get it into theaters because we've heard the story of how that movie even came about and how it was almost shelved. And, you know, it's really a story on its own of how the Sound of Freedom came about. But you left your professional career in 2017. That's a pretty big jump to commit to this cause.
Well, and it's even a bigger jump when you realize what that career was. I was the co-founder of what was at the time a multi-billion dollar investment firm. In fact, when I retired completely in 2017, we had well over $10 billion in assets under management. So I was doing very well in the professional career. In fact, my business partner, John Pennington, when I first went undercover on that first mission, he called me up and he said, "Paul," he said, have you thought through this?" He said, you're set. You literally could sell out and buy an island and be happy the rest of your life." And I said, "John, would I really be happy if I bought an island, if I bought another plane or a yacht?" I said, "If I was doing something else dangerous, if I was climbing Everest, you and I would have the same conversation." He said, "Yeah, we probably would." And I said, "When I'm 95 years old and I look back on my life and I say I climbed this mountain and I helped build this multi-billion dollar company and I helped rescue this many children from slavery, which one of them matters at all?" And he's since that time become one of our biggest supporters in the Child Liberation Foundation and other foundations that I have helped to start and fund over the years.
So the Child Liberation Foundation, Paul, you know, why was that such a calling for you? I mean, what is it that you said, "I have to do this"?
Well, if you saw the movie, there's a little girl. They called her Princess, referred to her as Rocio in the movie. That was just a name we took from one of my ex-wife's names. But it was that little girl that changed my life forever. I was sitting in a chair, this little girl presented as 11-year-old virgin standing before me. Her eyes were almost even with mine as I was sitting down and she was standing up. And all I could see was fear in her eyes. And her makeup had been smeared from her crying, scared to death of meeting me and the other men who were supposedly going to defile her. And I made a commitment at that moment to myself, to my creator, to God, to that little child, that I would dedicate my life to eradicating that evil from the face of the earth. And since that time, that's exactly what I've done. I turned to the Homeland Security agent that was with us at the time and some of the other operators, and I said, that was the most transformational experience ever that I had experienced up to that time. And, you know, I had donated a lot to child-related charities, but I had no idea the evil that was in the world. And when I saw it firsthand and saw how horrible a situation that was and realized that it was the fastest-growing criminal enterprise in the world and the second most profitable, second only to illegal drug trade, and soon going to become the most profitable because you can sell a bag of cocaine once. You can sell a child 5 or 10 times a day for years and years. And so So I ended up retiring early, quit my job, and dedicated millions of dollars and all of my time to fighting child trafficking. And with the movie, we realized that, you know, back at the time of Abraham Lincoln, it wasn't guys like us. It wasn't the teams that did the undercover work and rescuing the slaves. It wasn't them that created the biggest difference. It was people like you, Ryan. It was the influencers. It was Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was the media of the age that created an awareness with good people of what was going on in the South. And in fact, years later, when Abraham Lincoln met Harriet, he shook her hand and he said, "So you're the little lady that wrote the book that started the Civil War." And so that's why we had to make the movie. We had to create awareness so that we could start having these conversations, and parents could learn things to keep their children safe in a dangerous world.
Paul, and that is why you're doing media now, as I understand it, is to talk about this issue. Let's talk about this before we run out of time. What is happening right now in Ukraine, and how is it related to this war that's ongoing?
I'll tell you this, Ryan. Every time there is a war, there is a massive earthquake, there is a calamity of any sort, traffickers around the world will come and take advantage of that situation. We spent a bunch of time in Haiti. Hundreds of children have been recovered in Haiti and brought back to their families because of our efforts and other foundations that I've helped to fund and start and our teams have worked on. And a huge percentage of them came from when the earthquake happened and traffickers brought these children into these horrible situations. This happens in every country that there's a travesty like that, and absolutely it's happening in Ukraine with the war. In fact, even before the war started, it was known that one of the worst places in all of Europe for child trafficking was in Ukraine, and there is a lot of things like this you're trying to cover up the child trafficking that's happening. And so as soon as there's a war somewhere, we have teams that go in. We've got teams that have been in Israel, in the Hamas areas, and identifying children that are there. And absolutely there's things that are going on in Ukraine as well. We've had teams over there many, many, many times. But it's been a source of human trafficking since the early 90s. There's a lot of people that are being trafficked for the purposes of forced labor, and a lot of sexual exploitation that's happening there as well.
Man, Paul, that's incredible, and I'm so glad that you have taken on this cause. Obviously, a lot of kids are too, and a lot of families. What can people who are hearing this do? It's one of those things that makes you want to take action. Paul, what do people do?
There's a couple things. First of all, I have where there's a book you can type, you can just go to soundoffreedombook.com and it'll hyperlink you into a place you can get a book where the first four or five chapters are all about things that parents can do to keep their kids safe. It's, you know, the making of an undercover operator. I talk about all of the training that we did and the mindset and really paying attention to signs that kids are showing that they could be vulnerable. Now, a lot of parents, when they leave the Sound of Freedom movie, they say, you know, I want to go do something. I want to help. I'm going to go fight this evil. And the worst thing that you can do is go to Ukraine or go to Colombia, try to go rescue some children. You're going to get arrested. You're probably going to get shot. And these are very dangerous places that traffickers are selling these children. The very best thing you can do as a parent is to go home and hug your children. And people are like, well, how does that help? You know, I'm not hugging children. Well, the majority of children that are taken, that are sold across borders, the majority of those children come from broken homes, from runaways or a broken, very broken foster care program where there's a high case of abuse and a high case of trafficking that's going on there. And so having a healthy nucleus family is very, very important. Teaching your children confidence, teaching them self-defense skills and situational awareness. These things are very, very valuable. And we teach that in the book as well. But the most important thing is having a relationship with your children where they can very comfortably come to you and tell you when something doesn't feel right. Here's that crazy statistic. The majority of children who are sold for sex, it's not like what you see in the movies. Yes, Sound of Freedom, those things really happen, where a healthy family, a child is taken and taken to another country. Yes, those things do happen, but it's very, very seldom. The majority of children who are sold for these heinous acts sleep in their own beds at night, meaning a lot of times their parents are unaware. You need to have a relationship with your kids where they can comfortably come to you and say, hey, you know what? I don't like it when you tell me to hug Uncle Harry because he touches me weird. He tells me that we should have secrets together that aren't for you to hear. Or I don't like it when I go to our friend's house because her brother has been taking pictures of us when we're changing and he slaps me on my bum. Mm-hmm. Or I don't like this babysitter because this babysitter, she's showing us pornography and she tells us that we should trust her more than you. You know, these are grooming behaviors. And if your children feel uncomfortable in coming to you with these situations, then they're going to get worse. They're going to be taken advantage of by perpetrators and exploited. And it happens right under our noses. In fact, you walk out in your front yard, you look left and you look right. In every neighborhood in America, there's a very good chance that one of those homes is a dangerous place for children. And it's important for us to understand the fact that one out of every four women that you know, one out of every four, have been a victim of sexual abuse as a child. Most of them in their own homes, most of them without their mother or father even knowing about it. And so this is the big travesty, and that's what we have to be paying attention to. And fortunately, the Sound of Freedom has given us the opportunity to talk about this.
Paul, so thankful that it has, so thankful that that God has opened that door to Sound of Freedom to be able to talk about these things so openly, because it is something that I think tugs at everybody's heart, and people don't know what to do about it. So it's great advice there. We're running short on time, so I just want to thank you for everything you're doing. Soundoffreedombook.com. Like Paul said, get that book if you're interested in reading more about anything he's been talking about here. We will be right back with more Wiggins America. Well, we've been talking debate. No reason to stop now. It is the news. I mean, I don't know what else people are talking about this weekend. I really am surprised that they put it on this date. You know, June 27th is a weird date for a presidential debate, partially because, and there's a lot of conspiracy theories about this, partially because they haven't actually nominated the candidates yet. Now, they have all the delegates. They've gone through most of the primaries at this point, but they haven't gone through the official coronation for the candidates. And so the conspiracy theory is that they did that on purpose so they'd have an opt-out coming up that they could, you know, get out of this thing. The problem is, I don't know how they do that. There's a lot of people calling for it, but the rules are the rules. And once you have the delegates, unless you concede, and I've said this phrase before, they have to either coerce him or kill him at this point to get out of this race. Otherwise, he's going to be the candidate. Now, I've talked about that plenty. But I wanted to get to this at the end of the show today. A little behind the scenes. So at 97.1, aside from a presidential election, I would say a midterm election would come in second, but then nights like these debate nights are probably third. You know, there are only a handful of big nights like this where we did the event at Dave and Buster's. We're broadcasting it live. Obviously, the eyes and ears of the nation turn toward these big moments. It's one of the reasons that we're here and we do well on these things. We have a team that is built to handle these things. And I thought that event went very, very well. Whether you were part of the Dave and Buster's, like in person, which hundreds of people were there. We unfortunately had to stop accepting new people like 2 weeks into talking about it. So I think we could have maybe filled the entire building, let alone the large room that we were in with the hundreds of people or whatever. But These are big events, okay? So we did like special imaging, and that's part of what I do here. It's part of why I've made my show only an hour instead of 2 hours, is because this kind of stuff, I mean, it's not just this. I've always done this, but it's just I'm doing a lot more stuff, and I'm having trouble keeping up. But I have a blast when I get to make things like this. Now, this played, if you were listening on the radio, right as the debate was getting ready to start. And this is national coverage, so they gave us, I guess, 1 minute of inventory at the beginning of it. And we were like, why do we have 1 minute? What are you going to do with the minute? I guess we could just talk through it, but it'd be a weird, like, 1 minute talk segment. So instead, I made a 1 minute, like, Super Bowl type open to the debate. Now, before you listen to this thing, I was a little concerned that I threw in a clip about golf because I'm like, this isn't really the point, okay? But I did it anyway because I just thought it kind of worked, and I'm going to play it for you. Here you go.
The time has come.
I am a young, vibrant man. I look at Joe. I don't know about him.
Even your friends who aren't interested in politics are paying attention to this one.
Donald Trump lost 2 debates to me in 2020. Since then, he hadn't shown up for debate.
Donald Trump.
I just feel like a young man. I'm so young.
Joe Biden.
Make my day, pal. Yeah!
The rematch. This is their first meeting since 2020. Biden's team set the rules, and CNN is moderating the debate. Will Trump come out swinging?
I'm a very good golfer. He can't hit a ball 50 yards.
Which Joe Biden will we see tonight?
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true international effort to pressure.
It's all about to happen. The 2024 presidential debate. You're in the right place. 97.1 FM Talk. St. Louis's home for conservative talk is bringing it to you live.
All right. I thought that was pretty good. I got to say, though, my prognostication was also pretty good about what would be talked about in that debate. And I didn't know that that would be the case, but I just went with my gut. Joe Biden did stumble and mumble through that. So, you know, I used an older clip. He sounded better in that old clip where he was messing up than he did at the debate. In fact, I haven't played this one yet. This is Jill Biden after the debate on the stage talking to Joe and the crowd.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts. And let me ask the crowd, what did Trump do?
It's just a narrative, you know. After the whole thing was over, it was, of course, well, Trump just lied and Joe had a cold. Really, that's what a lot of the networks went with. But the astounding part of that clip is the first part.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question.
Joe, you did. And she's looking at him like he's a toddler. Joe, you did such a good job. You answered every question. And he's standing there glazed over like, oh, I did. That's great. I'm glad. That's where Joe was at the debate throughout the whole thing. And they were very proud of him for answering every question. I mean, really, that's where the bar is. But back to the golf thing. You know, I included that clip about, well, I could beat them. I didn't know that we'd actually have almost a minute where they talked about their health and then went into golf.
President Biden.
You can see he is 6'5" and only 235 pounds. Well, you said 6'4", 200. Well, anyway, that's what you're... Anyway, just take a look at what he says he is and take a look at what he is. Look, I'd be happy to have a driving contest with him. I got my handicap, which when I was vice president, down to a 6. And by the way, I told you before, I'm happy to play golf if you carry your own bag. Think you can do it?
That's the biggest lie, that he's a 6 handicap of all.
I was an 8 handicap.
Yeah.
8?
Never.
But I have, you know, I mean, I've
seen your swing. I know your swing. Let's not act like children.
That was the worst moment of the debate. If you watch the whole thing, like many of us did, it was longer than we thought it was going to be, first of all. But that was the moment that I think all of us went, No. Trump, you know, he gets baited into these things. And it's Joe Biden. Joe Biden was falling down the whole time, almost literally. And all he had to do was just sort of shrug off. Well, I was a six handicap, and I challenge you to play. He just, all he had to do was just stand there and just do the eyebrow thing that he does. He fell into it. But I would say for the most part, he didn't. The more the debate went on, so if you watch the whole thing, the first roughly hour until they took their first little break, Trump was nails. I mean, he was spouting off policy. He was talking about issues. Joe Biden was awful. And actually, I would say Biden, if he got better at all, it was toward the end, because he was doing things and Trump was starting to take the bait a little bit more toward the end. And that's where it really turned. But for the most part, Trump was disciplined. He was not his normal self. He, you know, the punchback normal self. He was still Trump. And so there's stuff like that that still happened. But he mainly kept it about policy. And that's why he won that debate partially. The other part is that America saw that Joe Biden is currently the president and cannot be. It puts us in a very, very weak position for the next 4 months. That is something that I am concerned about. Our enemies, what are they going to do after seeing that? They already knew that he was weak, but America saw something Thursday night. But so did the world. Stop there. You can get the whole episode by typing in Wiggins America. The podcast will come up in many different locations, and we'll see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We've been talking debate. No reason to stop now. That is, it is the news. I mean, I don't know what else people are talking about this weekend. I really am surprised that they put it on this date. You know, June 27th is a weird date for a presidential debate. Partially because, and there's a lot of conspiracy theories about this, partially because they haven't actually nominated the candidates yet. Now, they have all the delegates, they've gone through most of the primaries at this point, but they haven't gone through the official coronation for the candidates. And so the conspiracy theory is that they did that on purpose so they'd have an opt-out coming up that they could, you know, get out of this thing. The problem is, I don't know how they do that. There's a lot of people calling for it, but the rules are the rules, and once you have the delegates, unless you concede, and I've said this phrase before, they have to either coerce him or kill him at this point to get out of this race. Otherwise, he's going to be the candidate. Now, I've talked about that plenty. But I wanted to get to this at the end of the show today. A little behind the scenes. So at 97.1, aside from a presidential election, I would say a midterm election would come in second. But then nights like these debate nights are probably third. You know, there are only a handful of big nights like this where we, you know, we did the event at Dave and Buster's. We're broadcasting it live. Obviously, the eyes and ears of the nation turn toward these big moments. It's one of the reasons that we're here and we do well on these things. We have a team that is built to handle these things. And I thought that event went very, very well. Whether you were part of the Dave and Buster's, like in person, which hundreds of people were there. We unfortunately had to stop accepting new people like 2 weeks into talking about it. So I think we could have maybe filled the entire building, let alone the large room that we were in with the hundreds of people or whatever. These are big events, okay? So we did like special imaging, and that's part of what I do here. It's part of why I've made my show only an hour instead of 2 hours, is because this kind of stuff. I mean, it's not just this. I've always done this, but it's just I'm doing a lot more stuff, and I'm having trouble keeping up. But I have a blast when I get to make things like this. Now, this played, if you were listening on the radio, right as the debate was getting ready to start. And this is national coverage. So they gave us, I guess, 1 minute of inventory at the beginning of it. And we were like, why do we have 1 minute? What are you going to do with the minute? I guess we could just talk through it, but it'd be a weird, like, 1 minute talk segment. So instead, I made a 1 minute, like, Super Bowl type open to the debate. Now, before you listen to this thing, I was a little concerned that I threw in a clip about golf because I'm like, this isn't really the point, okay? But I did it anyway because I just thought it kind of worked And I'm going to play it for you. Here you go.
The time has come.
I am a young, vibrant man. I look at Joe. I don't know about him.
Even your friends who aren't interested in politics are paying attention to this one.
Donald Trump lost two debates to me in 2020. Since then, he hadn't shown up for debate.
Donald Trump.
I just feel like a young man. I'm so young.
Joe Biden.
Make my day, pal. Yeah!
The rematch. This is their first meeting since 2020. Biden's team set the rules, and CNN is moderating the debate. Will Trump come out swinging?
I'm a very good golfer. He can't hit a ball 50 yards.
Which Joe Biden will we see tonight?
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true international effort to pressure.
It's all about to happen. The 2024 presidential debate. You're in the right place. 97.1 FM Talk. St. Louis's home for conservative talk is bringing it to you live.
All right. I thought that was pretty good. I got to say, though, my prognostication was also pretty good about what would be talked about in that debate. And I didn't know that that would be the case, but I just went with my gut. Joe Biden did stumble and mumble through that. So, you know, I used an older clip. He sounded better in that old clip where he was messing up than he did at the debate. In fact, I haven't played this one yet. This is Jill Biden after the debate on the stage talking to Joe and the crowd.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts. And let me ask the crowd, what did Trump do?
It's just a narrative, you know. After the whole thing was over, it was, of course, well, Trump just lied and Joe had a cold. Really, that's what a lot of the networks went with. But the astounding part of that clip is the first part.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question.
Joe, you did. And she's looking at him like he's a toddler. Joe, you did such a good job. You answered every question. And he's standing there glazed over like, oh, I did? That's great. I'm glad. That's where Joe was at the debate throughout the whole thing. And they were very proud of him for answering every question. I mean, really, that's where the bar is. But back to the golf thing. You know, I included that clip about, I could beat them. I didn't know that we'd actually have almost a minute where they talked about their health and then went into golf.
President Biden?
You can see he is 6'5" and only 235 pounds. Well, you said 6'4", 200. Well, anyway, that's what you're... Anyway, just take a look at what he says he is and take a look at what he is. Look, I'd be happy to have a driving contest with him. I got my handicap, which when I was vice president, down to a 6. And but by the way, I told you before, I'm happy to play golf if you carry your own bag. Think you can do it?
That's the biggest lie, that he's a 6 handicap of all.
I was an 8 handicap.
Yeah.
8?
Never.
But I have, you know how many?
I've seen you swing. I know you swing.
Let's not act like children. President Trump, we're going to turn.
Let's not act like children.
That was the worst moment of the debate. If you watch the whole thing, like many of us did, it was longer than we thought it was going to be, first of all. But that was the moment that I think all of us went, No. Trump, you know, he gets baited into these things. And it's Joe Biden. Joe Biden was falling down the whole time, almost literally. And all he had to do was just sort of shrug off. Well, I was a 6 handicap, and I challenge you to play. All he had to do was just stand there and just do the eyebrow thing that he does. He fell into it. But I would say for the most part, he didn't. The more the debate went on, so if you watch the whole thing, the first roughly hour until they took their first little break, Trump was nails. I mean, he was spouting off policy. He was talking about issues. Joe Biden was awful. And actually, I would say Biden if he got better at all, it was toward the end because he was doing things and Trump was starting to take the bait a little bit more toward the end. And that's where it really turned. But for the most part, Trump was disciplined. He was not his normal self. He, you know, the punchback normal self. He was still Trump. And so there's stuff like that that still happened. But he mainly kept it about policy. And that's why he won that debate partially. The other part is that America saw that Joe Biden is currently the president and cannot be. It puts us in a very, very weak position for the next 4 months. That is something that I am concerned about. Our enemies, what are they going to do after seeing that? They already knew that he was weak, but America saw something Thursday night. But so did the world. Stop there. You can get the whole episode by typing in Wiggins America. The podcast will come up in many different locations. And we'll see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.